Darkwraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2013. Lecture 22, delivered on November 11, 2013. The title of this lecture is The Public Corporation.
Today, The Public Corporation. This is a follow-up to the lecture that I did last week on equity, and I've actually talked about this before. This is formalizing the matter of becoming a public corporation and what that means in terms of common stock and all of that kind of information, and where you go to obtain information about public corporations and what the information means. Reasonably short lecture, actually. And again, this is review. A lot of it, because I brought this up before. Let's start with a corporation. Now, as you remember, a corporation is a state chartered entity. You go through the Secretary of State of the State of Incorporation, and you get your incorporation that way. And once incorporated, once the state has recognized this is a corporation, it becomes a legal entity under that state's laws. And of course, any of its business operations in other states, it would be on those under those states' laws too. But we have a corporation. Now, that corporation is not necessarily public, probably wouldn't be right off the bat. It would be a private corporation, privately held. I don't have to disclose anything to anyone except the IRS. And as a private corporation. Now, private simply means that the securities, the equity of the corporation, is held by one or more people who essentially run the corporation on their own. They haven't sold stock to the public in any kind of way. Now, a term that is somewhat related is what is called a close corporation. It's a corporation that is held by a small number of people. So, for example, my own corporation is a close corporation because the stock isn't out there all over the place. A very small group holds the secure stock of the corporation, and it's common stock. And then you have what's called the public corporation. It has sought and obtained the ability to sell its securities to the public. Now, there are two aspects to that. There is the federal component, and then there are the states. So when I file my forms to go public with the federal government through the Securities and Exchange Commission, pursuant to the Securities Act of 1933. The Securities Act of 1933, I am seeking qualification, not approval. Remember, the government doesn't approve of anything. I am seeking qualification to make this offering of stock to the public. And the federal government will say okay or not okay if there are deficiencies, and then you have to fix those. However, any state in which there is an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy, I have to get that state's permission as well. The state, so I could have a public offering, do my form, whatever, form S-1 or whatever, with the federal government. But then, suppose I wanted to sell that stock to people, citizens of Illinois. I have to go to the Illinois Securities Division and put forth the proper paperwork, too. Now, oftentimes, if you've gotten it all right for the federal government, you are going to not have any problems with the state. However, you still have to go to the states that you're going to offer and sell in. And that's kind of like a difficult thing. In fact, a lot of companies that go public, you know, they'll get the forms qualified, form S1 or SB1 or something like that, qualified by the feds, by the SEC. But then we'll go looking around for, okay, what states do we want to sell in? And there are some states that are just really difficult. And you're not going to get a lot of people buying in that state anyway, so you just don't register the offering in those states. You want to make sure that you're not going to accidentally solicit in those states, but really, there are some states I wouldn't even bother to try to register. It'd just be a time-consuming matter, and I'm not going to sell to hardly anyone in that state, so the heck with them. So you've gone public, you've sold your stock, and okay, well, I've got my stock sold to the public, and I've successfully completed my offering, raised the money and all that kind of stuff, paid my brokerage fees, and everything's great. But how do the people buy and sell your stock in the secondary market? Well, there's another matter entirely, because just because you're public doesn't mean that there is a market for your stock. You have to go through one of the exchanges to get listed. And you can go through the New York Stock Exchange, which has extraordinarily high standards. And there are some companies that are perfectly good. They just say, the heck with that. That's way too much like work. You can go through various vehicles. Now, just as an example, when I did consulting, the way I would get companies so that they could people could buy and sell their stock, I got them listed on the NASDAQ. And in the NASDAQ, and I can't speak to how it works really all that well with respect to like the New York Stock Exchange. I did one with the Amex once, but typically with the NASDAQ, what I did was they had their own set of forms. A lot of it was information that I had done with the offering and all that, but I had to jump through the NASDAQ's hoops as well. I filed an application to get a ticker symbol, and the application was called the 13C211. And it went through the NASDAQ's compliance office. They looked at everything, and if it worked for them, then they would allow you a trading symbol. So that then brokers could call up your company and see a stock ticker symbol, and they could then buy and sell stock on behalf of clients or on behalf of the house. So there are all these layers to being a public company that has stock that trades. You have to deal with the feds, the states, and then your listing, if you want a ticker symbol so people can actually buy and sell your stock, you have to go through the exchange that you want to be listed on. And one listing, of course. New York Stock Exchange is great because you have extremely high liquidity. Millions and millions and millions of buys and sells all the time. The disadvantage is you have to jump through a lot of hoops. With the NASDAQ, you have a pretty good system. There's a lot of people buying and selling, brokerage houses and all that, but it's not as complete as that unbelievably thick, rich New York Stock Exchange. So you pay your penny and you take your choice of where you're going to get listed. But this is the primary market, as I had mentioned before. The laws here and the regulations that are created pursuant to those laws are for the offerings, for the company selling to investors. Afterwards, you are then in the secondary market where it's just buyers and sellers. The company is not involved in that. Well, it is in certain ways, and I'll mention that. But that is the Securities Exchange Act of 1934. That handles the secondary market. And it handles all manner of aspects of it, including how insiders would sell their stock or buy their stock, including how companies that are trying to get a stake in other companies have to proceed with respect to disclosures. So in other words, You are a company that is interested in getting a stake in my company. So you can creep in and buy a little bit of stock to start the ball rolling. But there would be a point where if you acquired a certain percentage, or you intended to, of my company, then the Securities Exchange Act would kick in and you would have to start making disclosures about what you're up to and what your position is. And of course, that gets the markets. We're watching those all the time. Isn't that interesting? They just triggered the Exchange Act. They crossed 5%, okay? What are they up to? Are they just trying to get an investment going, or are you actually interested in trying to get enough of a stake that you can make a run for my company? You have to disclose that at some point. And of course, on my end, I start getting kind of excited about that too. I'm going to be listening for rumors. Oh, there's no forms required, but it seems like that company has just acquired 3% of our outstanding common stock. Oh, what are they up to? Well, let's just give them a call. Hi, how are you? I hear you're buying stock in my company, you son of a bitch. What's your intention? And of course, you'll say, intention? We just like quality investments. My ass, you're after us, aren't you? No. Okay, bye. Someone go and shoot him and pop a cap in his ass. You understand, though, that there will be a trigger. And this is so that the markets have a good body of information so that investors know what's going on out there. These acts, and you probably know this from your law course you took or something like that. Congress passes laws all the time. That does not mean, actually, believe it or not, that really doesn't mean a whole lot. Well, this law was passed. You see, what has to happen for the law to start having teeth is for some public body to start enforcing the law. Now, with criminal law, that is often falls to police and prosecutors. But with business law, it's different. With business law, whenever Congress passes major legislation, it usually enables some kind of an agency so that that agency can create regulations that make the law usable, and then that agency says to the business community that is affected, here is what this law means for you as far as our enforcement of it. So the agency becomes the civil enforcer of laws that are passed by, of acts passed by Congress, at least in some cases. That's civil. So, and then if there is some major violation that goes beyond just bad boy, then that agency can refer the matter to the Department of Justice for criminal prosecution as well as civil prosecution. So, for example, the Environmental Protection Act, the Federal Environmental Protection Act, meant nothing except through the regulations and enforcement done by the agency that was created to do that. The Environmental Protection Agency. Similarly, with other labor law, means nothing except that there's an agency that creates regulations pursuant to the law and then enforces those regulations on business. So, with respect to securities law, back in 1933, when the Congress cracked down on the securities industry, it created the Securities Act of 1933, and then the Securities Exchange Act of 1934, and then it said, okay, we need an agency that will enforce this law. Watch the securities industry, watch companies going public. And so that's when we had the Securities and Exchange Commission, which was fully charged with overseeing the enforcement of securities law through regulations. Now, and this is taking you a little bit outside of just securities law, just to give you understanding. When agencies enforce, they have to explain to the business community, this is what the law means in this paragraph, this is what the law means in this paragraph, this is what we're going to do to enforce it, these are the specifics of how we will enforce it, what our expectations are on you. So in doing that, these agencies have three kinds of enforcement of rules that they can create. The first of those rules are called regulatory. Administrative. Administrative. These are the rules internal to the agency that create the structure of the agency. They're internal. Okay, we will have a division of compliance. We will have a division of services, outreach to companies. We will have this agency, this division, which will be in charge of fines and penalties. And we'll have this agency that interacts with the DOJ, the Department of Justice. That's the internal construction. Then you have the big meat, the regulatory aspect. This is where they read the laws and then craft them into regulations for companies to follow. Okay, the Act, and this is real simplified. Okay, the Act says that you must seek qualification for an offering of common stock. That's what Congress said. Okay, here's how we're going to enforce that. We'll have you fill out this form, or this form, or this form, and these will be the requirements in each form that you fill out. You'll have to have audited financial statements, you'll have to write a prospectus, you'll have to do all this kind of stuff. So the regulations give the life to the law. The law is, give me these laws, they don't, what the hell are you saying here? The regulations create the what they meant part. And then there's finally a third kind of darker aspect, quasi-legislative, where they actually, if the act that created them gives them permission, the regulatory agency can actually create sort of like secondary laws. Well, the act really didn't deal with this, so there's no law, so we will create a quasi-legislative law in our agency to deal with this matter. And it's like these agencies, which are unelected people, create actual law if they have to, if there's holes in the law, or if times have changed. We hope that they don't do that too much, but they kind of do sometimes. But now, let's talk about the Securities Act. Okay, I've gone through the hoops and I've gone public. I did my offering. I did everything right, so I got it qualified. I registered in the States. Did all that okay. So now I'm underway as a public corporation. I got a ticker symbol, let's say on the NASDAQ. I'm listed. That's what we mean by listed. The company's listed. We got a ticker symbol. There's buying and selling going on with the stock. Now remember, the primary offering is where the company is selling stock to the public, like Twitter has just done. That was the primary offering. They did the offering on Form S-1 with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Pretty much every state they were allowed to sell in and all that kind of stuff. Great. That was the primary offering. Now the stock is being bought and sold by people who sold and bought it. It's out there trading now. You look at the ticker symbol for Twitter. It's trading. Now, remember I said technically that doesn't involve the company at all. That's just buyers and sellers moving the stock back and forth. There is, however, an interest of the company in the secondary market for three reasons. The secondary market, which is where the buying and selling is occurring between private independent investors and all that kind of stuff. The first thing, of course, is that the company will keep an eye on it because it tells what the company's value is. The stock goes up, the company's more valuable. The stock goes down, the company's not as valuable. Okay, that's one reason the company does pay attention to the secondary market. There's another reason that is also out there. The company pays attention to the secondary market because suppose that the stock is going down in price. And I'll give you an example of this. In a consulting job I did in the late 90s, the stock had been at a high of about $5.50, and it had been tailing downward to the point where it was about 2.25. And I brought this up at a director's meeting. The stock is going down in price. Well, the company officials, on one hand, were upset, but on the other hand, one of the company officials said, well, who cares? This is just buyers and sellers. You know, it's not like it's hurting us. It's just hurting the people who bought at the high, and they're getting their clocks clean now. So why should we care about that too much? Why should the company care about that? There are a couple of reasons. Okay, investors who bought at $5.50, they're now ending up having to sell out at 2.25. Stock price went down. Well, you know, that's just private investors that made a bad decision. So why would the company be concerned about that? There are actually a few reasons. Can you think of any reason why the company would be concerned about that, bothered by that? Aside from the fact that you've got some pissed off former investors who sold out at the low, what else would be a problem with that? Anything? Well, here's one. What happens if the company wants to do another offering, a secondary public offering, raise more equity money? Stock price has taken a bath. They're not going to get any $5.50 a share. The lower the stock price goes, the less money they will raise in the next time they go to try to sell common stock in an offering. That's a big reason to try to keep your stock price up right there. It's a big reason because the next time you go out there and tap the equity markets and your stock price sucks, well, you're not going to get a whole lot of money. You're going to have to sell a whole lot more stock to get a decent offering finished up. Second reason the company should care about the secondary market, and this was the one that was going on at that director's meeting. The insiders were, to some extent at least, living off their ability to sell small amounts of stock, their restricted stock. Their stock is restricted under the Securities Exchange Act of 1934 by Rule 144. Insiders can't just sell their stock whenever they want to. For one thing, they're not allowed to sell their stock and then announce bad news or something like that. For another thing, they have windows. It's called leakage. They have to get an opinion of legal counsel saying that it is acceptable for this certain amount of their restricted stock to be released from Rule 144 so they can sell it. So in early younger companies, oftentimes the insiders, that's how they kind of like live for a while. They leak out their stock under Rule 144 leakage rules, and that's how they keep money coming in while the company is still struggling. So if the stock price tanks, well, they've got all this founder's stock, this Rule 144 stock, and they're not going to get hardly anything for it when they try to sell it during their leakage windows. Third reason, it comes back to something I brought before. Okay, buying and selling. The market is telling you things. The price is carrying the information of the company. Depending upon what form of the efficient market hypothesis you embrace, that price could be telling you everything about the company. Okay, let's watch this company's stock price. Stock price just keeps going up and up and up. Well, that's great news. Apparently, the market believes in us. Stock price is going down. Stock price is going down. Times are bad. Why would I, as a company, be concerned about my stock price going down? Never mind, I'm not going to sell any more stocks. So that's not, and I'm not selling any of my insider stock. There's not any problem with that. My company's fundamentally strong. It's got some great ideas. It's got some good brand equity building. And I've got some talented people in here. Stock price is falling. I could just sit back, well, the market's stupid. Or I could sit back and really worry. Why would I worry when the stock price is going down and I've got a decent company and I'm making all my disclosures? Look, we're having difficulties now, but we've got such great prospects and the stock price is going down and down and down. Why would that worry me? Now, that's an interesting possibility. Something, that's why I would want to make sure that I had good relationships with investment analysts in the big houses, and maybe even some independents who are kind of out there. Okay, what are you hearing? What's hurt? What's wrong? What's going on? Is someone spreading bad rumors about us, or is there some fundamental that we're just not seeing? That might be something that would be worth looking into. There's another thing that I would worry about, too. Yeah? Yeah, I'm worried about the market value of my company. Apparently, the market thinks the market value of my company is suckitude. But, okay. Let me ask you something. I want to buy you. And I check on eBay, and you're going for $10 million. Like hell. $10 million, that's ridiculous. For him, I mean, look at him. I mean, that haircut, my God. They should stop you on the street and give you a ticket for that. But $10 million, yeah. Okay, I check on eBay. Ooh, down to $5 million. Down to $2 million. Then I check one morning, $80? Whoa. Put that in the shopping cart and close the deal. Okay, why should I worry about my stock price going down too much, even though I have a really good company? That makes me take over bait. Cheap, strong fundamentals, price going down, bargain basement. Someone's going to take over my company because I'm cheap. My stock price goes too low. Someone's bound to notice, oh, this is a fundamentally strong company. We're swimming in cash, and here's this poor son of a bitch flopping around on the beach at $2 a share. Yeah. So why should I be worried about a hostile takeover? Why should I be worried about that? Why should I worry about some company buying 60% of the stock of my company, or even 51%? Why should I worry about that? Wouldn't that be great? Yeah, we just got new investors. They like us. They think we're great. What's the problem with that? Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly, precisely. First thing they're going to do is come in and clean up, think they know more than I do, and resolve the whole company to their liking. Sort of like that takeover of Wendy's. Yeah, they had great ideas. They put Dave Thomas out to pasture. They started making fun of his daughter Wendy in commercials. They wiped out the value menu concept. Yeah, they were great. Exactly. You see, I don't want my company's stock price to go too low because then I am going to be vulnerable to predators. And some of those predators, the first thing they're going to do is fire my ass and replace what was the fundamentally good part of the company, its management team, with their own geniuses who don't know jack about my business. So there are reasons why, even though I say, well, the company isn't involved in the secondary market, to some extent it is. Now, what can I do if my stock price is falling and you're in a company and a lot of you are going to be leaders someday of companies? God help us. But you're going to be leaders of companies. What am I going to do to stop this fall in the price? Got any ideas? Madam, what would you do? Price of your company is falling, the stock is falling in price. What do? Sell more. Supply goes up, price goes down. Yeah, that won't work. A buyback. I can go in the market and buy my own shares. Put pressure on demand. Demand goes up, price goes up, and that can halt the skid. The problem with that is that you first of all have to have the money to do that, you know. How would I get the money to do that? I could have the money. I could be swimming in cash and I could do a buyback. You're seeing that happening with companies right now. It's interesting. Right now, you're seeing a lot of companies that have a lot of extra cash. They're buying back their stock, putting it into treasury. You can't, the company buys back stock. It doesn't cancel the stock. It goes into what's called treasury stock. But at least it's not out there floating around for some hostile takeover to grab, predator to get. And it also could push your price of your stock up. But suppose I don't have the cash to do that. What else could I do to be able to buy back my own stock? Let's stick on that buyback scheme. I want to bring my price of my stock up. But I don't have a lot of cash to do that kind of thing. Is there another way that I could do the buyback? Yeah?
Is that like reverse splits?
Well, that wouldn't, yeah, all that would do is concentrate the ownership even more seriously. Oh, well, yeah. Okay, splits and reverse splits actually have no meaning whatsoever. It's sort of like, you know, I'm hungry, and there's a steak. Okay, I'm going to cut that steak in two. Now I'll be satisfied. No, it doesn't work. Don't let any idiot investment guru tell you otherwise. Okay, what else could I do? I need to buy back my stock. I'm going to try to stop the skid of my stock price. So I've got to buy back. My plan is to buy back. But we don't have a lot of money to do that. What could I do? Yeah, go. Bingo. In other words, I can move my capital structure so that I take on more debt to get rid of equity. Actually moving towards leverage. Absolutely. That was cool. Yeah, essentially what I'm doing here is I'm moving my capital structure towards debt and away from equity. Borrow money and be right up front. We are issuing $50 million in bonds for the purpose of repurchase of common stock of the company. First, you'd have the money to do it. And second of all, the markets, oh, so you're going to buy back your own stock? Right there, that would probably cause your stock price to reverse its slide and start going up on that news. Excellent. Okay, now getting off the buyback of stock, is there anything else that I can do to cause my stock price to stop going down? Go.
Real quick, you're saying you want to issue bonds so that you can buy back your stock?
Yeah. I borrow money to buy. I borrow money to clean my equity up, move it out of the market. So I then have a corporation when all the smoke clears, I have a corporation that has its total capital structure has more debt and less equity. And, of course, that creates leverage, which, of course, makes more risk, of course, obviously. You become a riskier corporation. Okay, now, back to it. How else do I get my stock price to stop going down? Yeah. There's an interesting thing right there. Doing a dividend actually could suddenly make investors, oh, wait, they're giving a dividend? Well, isn't that generous? That's actually a good idea. And I actually had suggested that a couple of times. The warning on that is that once you start issuing dividends, they're going to expect you to keep giving dividends after that. Sort of like you own a dog, you give him a cookie, he's going to expect a cookie every day. My cats are like that. I started giving them breakfast cheese every morning. Breakfast cheese. One morning, the next morning, they're all sitting there, where's our breakfast cheese? Oh, God, I got to go to the store and buy cheese. Yeah, you see, you kind of spoil them. So if you don't do the next dividend, they'll punish your ass, okay? So, but yeah, the dividend is a way to get, and it's also a way to get the attention of investors who hadn't probably looked at your stock before. Suddenly they're looking through the news, oh, that company issued its first dividend. Well, maybe we ought to grab a couple of shares of that stock. But like I said, that's an evil mistress, because then you're sort of like, you're expected to do that. It's like you go out, okay, you ever gone out on a date? Yeah. Bro, man card issued. Okay, you decide you're going to impress the hell out of her. You're not going to take her to Steak and Shake. you're going to take her to Denny's. No, I'm serious, you know. And let her get a couple of grand slams, you know. And then after that, you know, instead of going for the cheap movie tickets at Starplex that are $3, you go for the more expensive $5 tickets at Starplex because they actually turn on the heat at night in the theater and all that. And you make sure you have enough gas so that you don't run out on your way home. She's going to expect that the next time. And you don't have the money for Denny's. You don't have the money for the expensive tickets. And you are going to run out of gas. So, you know, the problem is you're setting up an expectation. But it is a strategy. I'll give you that. You're absolutely right. Okay, anything else you can do? Okay, you're a consultant, as I was. And I got nothing. I got nothing as far as money to try to do a dividend, money to buy back the stock, setting up an offering of bonds. Well, you have to do that. That's a registration statement. We're going to struggle. We probably couldn't even afford the lawyers to do that. Is there anything I can do? Anything at all I can do? Issue press releases. Just pump the stock. Pump it. Just do whatever. Get some sorry-ass journalist who hasn't had a good story in a couple of years. Find one. Invite him to the company to show these wonderful things that you're doing. Get the local radio station, whatever you can. Make news. If you have to do something that's noticeable and not even particularly nice, do it. Get press, as we said. Get press. Press release, whatever. If I have to, I will find a reason to do a press release. And then I'll find a reason to do another one a couple of weeks later. Try to get notice so that lower and marginal investors begin to know, oh, wow, look, there's a press release. It showed up on Google for a little bit. Well, I ought to buy a few shares of that. Try to create smoke. If you can't have a fire, at least you can light a joint, okay? I didn't say that, for Christ's sake. That's what we did. That was the business. Pump it. As a matter of fact, what we would often do. No, for God's sake. I mean, we would do Hail Marys. We would do a lot of, there were times when, you know, we would try to get local press by having one of the officers of the company do something and get in trouble and all that. We had one case, we brought a couple of junior analysts who were running their own day trading companies, and we brought them in. We showed them an incredibly good time. We took them to a restaurant, gentlemen's club, and stuff like that, so that they'd write good stuff about us. Yes, we did that. We nearly blew we maxed out the credit cards of the company just to get these guys to write nice things about us and get it into the mainstream. We went with press release services that were just abominable, just so we could get it out on the wires. Anything we could do just to get notice of the company so that some people would start buying and so that there was at least some balance between the sell orders coming in and the buy orders. Anything you can do that might get you a little bit of notice. And so that's something, a warning to you. It isn't just low-end companies that do this. A lot of times you will see companies do things for the purpose merely of increasing their value through the value of their equity. Entertainers do this all the time. They have brand equity. And if they are fading, they will do something to change the dynamic. And oftentimes it will be something controversial so that they get back in the news. a master of this. Well, there are several incredible masters of this. Woody Harrelson is incredible. Whenever he's got a new movie coming out, he and his wife will do things that will get them thrown in jail. And then Woody Harrelson thrown in jail. Oh, by the way, his new movie will be coming out next week. Free press. Who else does this? Who else fades, was fading, and every time he or she fades, then there's some controversial thing that happens, and the press goes all over it, and suddenly they're back in the news, and their brand equity goes back up. Oh, yes, Britney Spears. And who else? Oh, absolutely. Who else? Mel Gibson, absolutely. I mean, he does this on purpose. He goes stupid crazy. It's planned. These guys aren't crazy. Politicians do it too. They'll say outrageous things, not because they believe it. I know some of these guys. They're very normal human beings. They're nice. They really care about people. But they'll say things that just, you're the Antichrist now, huh? Apparently, you need a boost in the polls. Who else? Other ones that do as Paris Hilton has done it. She was promoting she had just launched a new line of perfumes called the Paris Hilton perfume line. And I really don't even want to smell those. God knows what they smell like. But she accidentally dropped a vial full of cocaine in an airport just to get press for herself. It worked. Of course, she was Paris Hilton, so she didn't go to prison. You would be in prison being some hard-timer's old bitch if you did that. But she got by with it. But unfortunately, it backfired on her because then she went over to Japan to promote her perfume line in that market, where she is highly excitable to the young. And the authorities met her at the gate and escorted her back to the first plane back to the United States. We don't want you here. You skank. Or something like that. But anyway, okay. So all you're doing with these kinds of things, and we did it with our company sometimes. If we were really desperate for press, we wanted to get people to notice the stock again and maybe buy some of it, we'd do something. Well, I didn't, because I didn't want to be some hard-timer's bitch. But we'd have one of the officers or one of his kids do something. Get us in the news in a bad way, whatever, just so we could get some press. So you turning around the stock price is kind of an important thing if it's going down. So the secondary market does matter to the company in one way or another. Really briefly here, and I'm not going to go through everything that I went through before, but once you're a public corporation, remember that the shareholders elect the board of directors. And then the board of directors hires the executive management team. These people are in charge of maximizing shareholder wealth. This is where I have to bring up the final point I'm going to make in this lecture is this. Our most direct measure of shareholder wealth is the stock price. And so the board of directors is directly answerable to the shareholders with respect to increasing that and making it as high as it can be. The problem is this: we measure the value of a corporation by its stock price. And the shareholders are going to be very uninterested in other measures of value. They're going to say, what is the price of the stock? What does that mean the value of my holding is? They're not going to care about long term and all of that. They're going to want the highest value possible now. The board of directors is supposed to be completely dedicated to maximizing shareholder wealth, period. There has been flowing around, I'm sure almost all of you have heard it somewhere in the business courses you've taken, the idea of the stakeholders in a corporation. In other words, a corporation has other groups that it is responsible to. The stakeholders, yes, the shareholders are stakeholders, but so are the employees, the society, Mother Earth, and other things. So we must increase, in the modern pop academic theory, we must increase stakeholder value, maximize stakeholder value, not just shareholder value. Here's the thing about that, though. At the end of the day, the unions, the society, Mother Earth, and all that can't fire you. The stockholders can. The only one that has actionable responsibility to the corporation actionable means to get management change is the shareholders, period. That's the modern corporation. It's not theory, it's the reality, except for one thing. But before I get to that one thing, understand, stakeholder theory is irrelevant to us. We are there to maximize shareholder value. They are our principal. We are their agents. That agency relationship is fiduciary. And make sure you know about that fiduciary, because I'll be asking that agency relationship on the second test. And I'll bring it up again on Wednesday, just give you a pre-review for the exam next week. But don't buy this stakeholder theory. It's the shareholders. If we maximize their value, they will keep us. If we don't, they will get rid of us and find people who will take care of them. That's how it works. But there's a problem here in the modern corporation, and we see it all the time. The fact of the matter is that the board of directors is supposed to represent the shareholders, and yet they give these multi-million dollar contracts, money, options on stock, unbelievable benefits packages to executive management. Every dollar you give to the CEO of a corporation, the board of directors authorizes in salary to the CEO of a corporation, is a dollar the shareholders don't get. The reality of it is that, as far as we have been able to tell with research that we've done, above a certain salary, you don't get any better performance out of managers. Honestly, there's no evidence that giving $16 million to a CEO in salary and bonuses and options and benefits and all that gets you a better manager, gets you a better CEO than $1 million does. It just isn't there. There's no evidence. In fact, many of these CEOs who get these massive salaries that are at the expense of shareholders, they suck. The companies don't do all that great. But they still get these salaries. The argument is, well, we give $16 million. Yeah, that doesn't go to the shareholders, but these guys are so good, they'll make the stock prices go up so the shareholders really do get it back. No evidence that it happens. So how is this going on that we have this absolute disconnect that the board of directors is allowing these massive executive salaries, and yet they're supposed to be representing the shareholders, but it's not doing the shareholders any good. Lower salaries, you know, you don't make them starve, but for God's sake, you've got $16 million going to an executive manager. he'll be no better than an executive manager at $1 million. So there's $15 million that could go to the shareholders as dividends. It could go into the company as plowback for new capital equipment and then jobs to handle that new machinery. And yet we're giving it to a CEO who doesn't do any better than a CEO who was being paid $1 million. It's a complete disconnect in our system right now. And we, theoretically, this should just go away. I mean, the markets should discipline this out, make it so that it doesn't happen anymore. You give a CEO $60 million, well, the stock price is just going to go through the floor because the investors say you are stupid to be paying that. It just doesn't happen that way. It just doesn't happen that way because the markets are controlled by these massive fund managers that are part of the problem. It's like an old boys club. Well, the fund managers make huge money, so they're not going to say anything when the executives are paid massive salaries that they don't have any extra value for getting. The problem is huge, and it is all over the place. You have some companies that don't pay very big executive salaries. They are doing really well. You have companies that are paying massive executive salaries. They are struggling. They are suffering. So what do? They get rid of one executive management team, and they bring in another executive management team and pay them more. It's like the football teams that keep incompetent coaches, and when they finally fire them, those coaches just go somewhere else and be incompetent. It's a challenge right now, and the one thing we hate to say is government has to come in because the markets aren't taking care of this. The question is, if we don't want the government to step in with its big clog and cause more damage than it will solve, we've got to find a way to fix this right away before this creates problems that we can't, and corporations suffer in ways that we can't fix down the line. What happens when we don't deal with this? Let's talk about the 10 largest banks in the country. The executive salaries are beyond your wildest dreams. Those people are paid wages that are fit for kings and queens, and yet those giant banks were so badly run that to 2013, the government has had to put in $14 trillion to keep those banks from collapsing and sending the world back to the dark ages. We pay for it in the end as a society, as the ultimate, forgive me for saying it, stakeholder. When these private corporations coddle these executives with these huge salaries, this isn't a liberal thing, this is just the reality of it. We don't need the government paying $14 trillion to keep banks alive that are run by coddled executives that get huge salaries year after year after year when their banks are in such bad shape that we have to save them so that we don't have the world collapse around us. So there you go. That's all I have for you. Go home.